great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and really pleased to have back author Kathleen Ernst. She's from Wisconsin, creator of the Chloe Ellefson Mystery Series. And her newest book in the series is called The Lace Maker's Secret. I finished it a couple of days ago, really enjoyed it. It's set primarily in Green Bay and explores the history of Belgium immigrants in Wisconsin. It talks a bit about lace making, and there's some murder involved. So lots to talk about with her, and I hope you'll join in. Are you a lace maker? What do you love about it? What do you like about historical fiction? I'd like to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Kathleen Ernst, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
I'm delighted to be here.
You've been with us many times. This is your 10th book.
In this series, yes.
In this series.
Or 9th book, I'm sorry. I'm working
ninth,
on the 10th.
You're
yes.
9th book, okay. But there are still listeners who aren't familiar with your books, the Ellefson series. So tell us about Chloe and some of the other recurring themes and so forth in the series.
Well, I decided to create this series because I love Wisconsin and its history and its special museums and historic places. And when I left a position at the State Historical Society, I just decided to channel that passion into this series. Mm-hmm. So Chloe is a curator of collections at Old World Wisconsin, which is, of course, a real and wonderful historic site.
Yes.
And in each mystery, she's what I call a reluctant sleuth. She doesn't go looking for bodies, but in each mystery, her knowledge of the past is necessary to help solve a contemporary mystery. And the other recurring character is Relke McKenna, who is a police officer in the village of Eagle. And Old World Wisconsin is located right outside of Eagle. Mm-hmm. But as the series has gone on, Chloe visits other historic sites and museums as well.
And in the book, what I always enjoy about the book is that you weave in the history of the area, and so we have chapters that deal with what currently is happening.
Yes, I enjoy doing that, and I've gotten good feedback from readers. As historians, no matter how talented a researcher you are, there are always going to be gaps that we just will never be able to fill in the record. So writing a strand of historical fiction and creating historical characters that experience the events that Chloe is researching allows readers, I think, a first row seat to what's going on.
Yeah, I think you're right. And do you ever have people say, oh, I like one part better than the other? Do you have people say, oh, I like the really love the history parts or not?
I do, yeah. Some people have a preference. And if of the people that probably say what their preference is, I think a lot of people do enjoy the historical fiction strands. But I also have lots of people who are Relke McKenna fans and Chloe fans, and they enjoy that part too.
So you've written, as you say, about many sites in places in Wisconsin. I remember one that was set in Iowa, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I have crossed state lines a couple of times. One book is set in Decorah, Iowa, at the Vesterheim Museum of Norwegian Heritage. And one of the books deals with Laura Ingalls Wilder home sites. So that took us from Pepin, Wisconsin, on to some other sites. And one of the books is set partly in Milwaukee and partly in the Twin Cities. And that looked at Polish heritage.
Yeah, all interesting books for sure. Well, what's the inspiration for portraying the Belgian American community in the Green Bay area? I found that really interesting.
I have been fascinated by the Belgian story for quite some time, so it had been on my mental list as a place that I wanted to explore. And I focused primarily on Green Bay and on southern Door County. And the story of the Belgian immigrants, and I've been studying the immigrant stories in the 1800s for 30 years,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, long time.
And the Belgian story is really remarkable. They faced obstacle after obstacle after tragedy after obstacle, but they created the largest community of Belgians in rural America. And today, many Belgian ancestors are proudly still plowing the fields and carrying on. And I think that's a real testament to what they survived.
Yeah, they survived a lot. And you cover a lot of some major events that are really were really terrible. Before we get into those, though, maybe you could just give us give our listeners a sort of a brief outline of how this particular book unfolds.
Sure. The premise is that Chloe Ellison has been hired as a consultant to create a furnishing plan for a Belgian farm that is being restored at Heritage Hill Historical Park. And this is a real farm that visitors can go and see today. But in the early 1980s, when the story is set, they were just getting started with that. So she's very excited to come to the area and learn more about the Belgian community. And on her arrival day, unfortunately, she discovers a body, because this is a murder mystery, and she has to do that. She also meets a friend of hers who is there to study Belgian lace, and there's a rumor or a legend that there might be a piece of very rare Belgian lace to be found in the area, and it turns out that perhaps more than one person might be searching for that. So I like to look at architecture, I like to look at cultural heritage, in this case of the Belgian community, and material culture, things that have survived. Always fascinate me because they have stories to tell.
Just had an email from Justin in Milwaukee who wonders about the origin of the name Relke. Is it also his mother's maiden name?
I knew someone years ago, not well, but it was his name, and it was had been his mother's birth name as well. It's a German name, at least in this case it was. And I wanted a memorable name when I was creating my character of Relke, and he is partly of Germanic descent. So that's where that name came from.
Very interesting. You can join in, too, by the way, with your own questions or comments. You can do like Justin did and email at email us at ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. Or give a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions and comments. So lace making, when did you get interested in lace making?
I had the great good fortune of receiving a tour of the lace collection at the Smithsonian Institution a couple of years ago, and that was really my introduction to the Belgian lace industry. And usually I look at folk arts, things that are passed from mother to daughter or itinerant travelers or something. But the industry of lace making in Belgium was absolutely fascinating, and the pieces of Belgian lace that I was able to view were absolutely exquisite and breathtaking. And some of the stories that came with the pieces of lace I found very compelling. So I had been thinking about doing a story that focused on Belgian immigrants here in Wisconsin. And then I had the opportunity to learn about the amazing lace industry in Belgium, and I had to figure out how to put those things together, because most of the early arrivals from Belgium to Wisconsin did not have the time and resources to be making fancy lace right away. So that became part of the story, and I had a fictional character named Seraphine who learns to make lace and loves to make lace. And then she immigrates to Wisconsin and struggles to find the time and energy and resources to pursue her dream that way.
Yeah, it's a great story. Kathleen in Townsend is on the line, so let's go to Kathleen. Thank you for calling.
Oh, good morning. Another Kathleen who's an author here. I don't know if you know where Townsend is, Kathleen, do you?
I'm afraid I don't off the top of my head.
Well, think Rhinelander and Marinette, and we're kind of in the middle.
Okay.
We have a local site, which I raised in the last 10 years, $150,000 to restore. It's called the Holt and Valcom Logging Camp Museum. And what's so special about our site is that it's the oldest logging camp sitting where it was built in America.
That is very special.
There are many older camps, but they've all been moved. And I thought that would be a wonderful setting for book 11.
Kathleen, because, thank you so much. My ever-growing list just has a new line on it for your logging camp museum.
Okay, here are a couple of ideas. First of all, as I'm walking out in the woods today, it's gorgeous color, even though it's raining. And we have lots of places to hide bodies. We also have, in Townsend, which is about 5 miles north of the community, a lot of the lumberjacks who lived all winter there at the camp in Lakewood would come up to Townsend because we had the best moonshine and the best hookers.
Well, there you go, Kathleen.
There's a lot of romance here. It's just really been fun to get involved in all of this, and I did four actual books on the history of Townsend, so it's just rich with stuff, and I'd have a lot of the research done for you.
Well, so, I will keep that in mind. Thank you so much.
And what's the name of the logging museum again, just so we have...
It's called Holt, H-O-L-T, and Balcom, B-A-L-C-O-M. It was built in 1881.
Okay.
And we do get visitors from all over the world, and almost every state in the Union every year, even though we're open only summer Saturdays. So, you know, it's an unclaimed jewel. And one little side note, we have a ghost.
Oh, so there comes another part for
there you go.
His it's name all is fodder,
Charlie.
Yes.
Yeah, and I did not believe in ghosts until Charlie came into my life, but I see him from time to time. So there you go.
Kathleen,
thank you so much.
Well, you know, there's a part about Chloe, doesn't involve her seeing ghosts, but there is something paranormal, would you call it that, about her?
She has a slightly enhanced perception sometimes. She has the ability, if a very strong emotion of any kind, joy, love, grief, anger, took place due to some historical event, sometimes when she enters an old building, she can perceive the emotion that's lingering there in that building. And I don't use that as a way for her to solve mysteries, but
no,
it is an interesting thing to explore, I think. A lot of people that I know, I hang around with a lot of, you know, history geeks, and a lot of people that I know have had some type of experience over the years that they can't explain, either at a historic place or contemplating a historic object or something.
And I'll bet most of us have had at one time or another in our lives mm-hmm. appear where you're at some place and you suddenly feel something a little different.
I've had that feeling. Yeah, that's exactly it. And I created hers, so her sense of that is just a little stronger than most of ours are.
Yeah, there we go. Kathleen, thanks again. Appreciate your call for sure. And Kathleen has made note of that logging museum.
Yeah, indeed.
And Charlie the ghost. And there's a possibility there. So appreciate your call. Paul in Lafayette County, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Paul.
Morning. Your guest said that south of Green Bay was the largest Belgian community in the United States. And I was curious if they were from from Flanders, the Flemish speaking or the French speaking area.
Most of the people that came to Wisconsin, both south and north of Green Bay, were Walloons. There were a few Flemish people that came as well.
Okay. See, now my dad was born in West Flanders.
Ah.
And they settled down around the Moline, Illinois. There's just hundreds of them down there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they're from two different areas, I guess. Well,
yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for calling.
Thanks very much for that call, Paul. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Talking with Kathleen Ernst, the author of the Chloe Ellefson Mystery Series, and her new book just out is called Mining for Justice, a Chloe Ellefson Mystery. Oh, no, it's not. That's an old one. That's one of the old ones. Oh, my goodness me. It is, what's the title?
The Lace Maker's Secret.
I can't believe I couldn't think of that. The Lace Maker's Secret. And you can join in again, 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Oh, Kate Archer Kent, our engineer, Jill Dodeau, our producer here on the Ideas Network. Talking today with Kathleen Ernst, author of the Chloe Ellefson Mystery Series. Her latest is called The Lace Maker's Secret, and just came out yesterday official, was the release, the official release. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to say how it's doing. Well, you've got a couple of books. I know that for sure because I read one. You can join in with your own questions or comments. Maybe questions for her. Maybe do you like the series? Have you read it? Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Carol in Rice Lake, we'll go to you next. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I just wanted to say that after reading all of Kathleen's books over the last year and a half, my husband and I decided it was time to take a little trip to southwestern Wisconsin to visit a lot of those state historic sites.
That makes me so happy. That is one of my great joys when I hear that people are inspired to go and see the real place. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Did you enjoy those trips, Carol?
Oh, very much. And we both actually volunteer quite a bit at a historical Pioneer Village Museum in Barron County. And just to echo the woman from the Rhinelander area, there are many museums in northwestern Wisconsin that have all kinds of things to deal with logging, especially the Knapp Stout Lumber Company, which I'm sure Kathleen knows was the biggest one in the world at one time. So we're hoping to see a future book about the logging industry.
That would be lovely. I'd love to get up to that part of the state, and I would find a logging story very fascinating.
Very fascinating.
Okay. And thank you for your volunteer work. In the history world, volunteers really make the world go round.
Oh, I agree.
Thanks, Carol. Appreciate it. And by the way, you sponsor, I mean, not sponsor, but you have events once in a while. I can remember some past events where you have invite readers.
I do. It's wonderful to work with the historic site that's being featured. We recently had a couple of tours at Pendarvis and Mineral Point, where Mining for Justice was set. And we actually have two Chloe Ellefson tours scheduled for later this fall at Vesterheim Norwegian American Museum, where Heritage of Darkness was set. So if readers are interested in that, they should check out the Vesterheim website.
Okay. And you have a site as well?
Yes. You can find a lot more information about all of the Chloe books on my website, which is simply KathleenErnst.com. KathleenErnst.com.
ErnST.com. There
yes.
We go. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. You know, one of the things that, you know, trees have come up in logging a few times, and in the history part of the book, when Seraphine and her husband arrive, along with other family members, they think they're going to be walking out into some cropland that they can farm, and instead
it's virgin forest. Yeah.
And you know, I'd forgotten the magnitude of those trees. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, it's hard to even imagine, trees broad enough that two or three people could hide behind them. And these people had come from a place that was very open. Land was very precious. They were used to sunshine and that type of terrain. And they ended up in these dark forests, and they had nothing, most of them had nothing but hand tools, and there was nothing to do but start the amazing process, the backbreaking process of trying to clear the trees.
I was just thinking about taking an axe.
Yeah.
How do you, I mean, you're not going to do that in 30 minutes.
They would girdle the tree, cut a strip of the bark all the way around, and that would kill the tree. And often they would just let them die before
fall.
They fall, right? And they had to start as soon as they could. A lot of the immigrants arrived in fall, and they were out of money, so they did what they could over the winter as weather permitted. And then a lot of the men had to go leave the farm, actually, farm being a euphemism still at that point, I think, to go earn some money in Green Bay or Milwaukee somewhere. So it was a very long and painful process to turn virgin forest into farm fields.
And then when the men left, mm-hmm. the women were left with the children to...
That's right. for weeks or even months on end. The women were left alone in what in the, those early years, for the first 2 or 3 years of arrivals, were pretty remote and isolated outposts.
And they did get some help. And in the history part of your of this book, or any of your books for that matter, the information you provide about the time and so forth is pretty accurate.
It's as accurate as I can make it. I am writing a novel, so occasionally I change a fact a little bit, but I always try to let readers know in the preface to the book. For example, one of the sites that I featured is the Belgian Heritage Center in Namur, Wisconsin, where Belgian descendants have done a fabulous job of creating museum exhibits and cultural programming, and they've done a great deal in 8 years, but it did not exist in at the time of this story. So I was so impressed with the work that they're doing that I wanted to include it. So I just put a little note in the front of the book and explained that I shifted the timeline there a little bit.
And you keep the timeline pretty much in a, well, you keep the timeline of the 80s in all your books.
I do. Time is passing as the series goes by, but it's passing relatively slowly. 4 books take place in 1 calendar year. And I keep it to the 80s in part because that was when I was working in the museum world, and so that's what I know and I can remember. And I will also say it makes it easier to write a mystery if the sleuth can't whip out her cell phone and Google the answer to any information that she needs to find.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. It's kind of fun. Yeah. As well, to you know, when you talk about having to go and find a telephone somewhere or whatever, and it's kind of fun to think, oh my goodness, that was.
And some of my younger readers get a little confused about some of the details, like how could someone twine a phone cord around their finger while they're talking on the phone? So I occasionally get those questions I have to explain, but I think people my age and older appreciate the little flashback.
For sure. Summer kitchens are an important part of this book.
Yeah.
Tell us about them.
Well, summer kitchens were often built on these farms to get the big, heavy cooking and processing meat after butchering and things, get that out of the house itself. So the heat of the fire and the workspace could be separate. It was convenient to the house, but it was a separate small building. And often they had brick bake ovens that were built from one end. And the women would bake by heating up the bricks, building a fire right on the bricks. And then once the bricks were hot, raking out the coals and putting in their bread or pies or whatever they wanted to bake. And I've always loved being inside of those old summer kitchens because I know it was a place where women spent a lot of time and they worked together and they were feeding their families and preparing for the winter. And some of that, I think, kind of lingers.
Yeah. And you can still see some of those summer kitchens.
You can. Yeah. And there are a couple that I know of in the area, Southern Door County and Northern Brown County, that you can see right from the road.
Yeah,
which is fun.
It really cool. Nancy in Grafton, let's go to you next. Hi, Nancy. Thank you for calling.
Well, I'm here in Ozaukee County, which is the smallest county in the state. And we have a little town called Belgium here in Ozaukee County. And I wish somebody who lives up in Belgium and who knows more about the history of it could call in, because they have different celebrations going on up there, which are very nice and in the old country way. And I just thought everybody ought to know there's a little Belgian Wisconsin here.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Nancy, for coming.
Thank you.
Are you familiar with Belgium, Wisconsin?
I have not studied that. No, I did not get to that area. I really concentrated mostly on Southern Door and Brown. And Kewaunee also has a Belgian
community as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that kind of struck me as I was reading the book was a description of a star that winds up. And I could recall, as I was reading that, I've seen that star on buildings in Door County. Actually, I think several of those. And I often wondered about them.
Yeah, my understanding from what I've been told by architectural historians, what we're speaking of is a large wooden star painted white, which is added to the gable end of a barn, usually right below the peak of the roof. And no one seems to remember exactly how that tradition got started. Speculation is perhaps it was a maker's mark, or perhaps it was a patriotic sign. But one of the historians that I talked to, his strongest theory was that it had to do with the faith of the Belgian people. As a group, faith was very important to them, and I think their religious faith helped them survive so many grueling ordeals. And as I drove around the back roads and saw these stars and thought about what the historian had told me, I decided to use it in the book.
Yeah, it was a great, and you know, Catholicism, religion plays a role in this particular book, and Catholicism in particular.
It does.
And there's a thread between the two timelines.
When I'm trying to decide what the next setting is going to be for a book, I always think about where my main characters, Chloe and Relke, are emotionally at the end of the last book. And I won't go into details, but Relke had sort of a crisis towards mm-hmm. the end of the last book. And so he was wrestling with some ideas when this book began, wrestling with some of his choices and his lack of faith. He had lost his faith after being raised in the Catholic Church. And so I knew that this would be a good time to write about the Belgians because their faith was so strong. And that way I could let the issues of faith and the questions about faith echo from one timeline to the other.
Huh. Other callers online. Mary in Cloquet, Minnesota?
Yeah, hi, Catherine. Yeah, I'm wondering, I have low vision. I'm legally blind, and I can't read anymore. I'm wondering, are your books recorded? Could I get them through Amazon or another place?
That's a great question, Mary. The first three books in the series have been recorded, so you can enjoy those now. I hope that in the future the rest of the series gets recorded as well.
Do you know if they're have been digitally recorded? I ask this because I have a digital player that has come to me through the Communication Center in St. Paul, and the library is down in Faribault, and I get them for no charge, and I'm just wondering if they would be available in that format.
I think they are. I'm not exactly sure with all the different types of players, but I would go ahead and try requesting. The first book in the series is called Old World Murder, and that has been recorded, and you should be able to get it.
Okay. I'm interested in the Lacemaker's Secret also. Do you know when it would be released in recording?
I'm afraid I don't know. I'm hopeful that it will, but I don't know.
All right. I'm sorry we can't help you with that part, but in the meantime, get started on version one or book one in the series, Mary. I hope you have a chance to do that. And frankly, you know, it's kind of fun to read them in order. You wouldn't necessarily have to, but...
You don't have to, but there is an arc to the series.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's worth reading them in order if you can. Vivian in Green Bay, we turn to you. Hi, Vivian.
Hi, I can shed a little light on Belgium in Ozaukee County because that was where my parents had a farm. What you find in Ozaukee County is a village of Belgium where they have a Luxembourg Heritage Museum. And what you find around Belgium in Ozaukee County are Luxembourgers, of which I am one. Then you get to Brown County, Kewaunee County, and there is a town of Luxembourg, populated primarily by Belgians. if you go to the book Romance of Wisconsin Place Names, it explains that a clerk in Madison made a mistake and assigned the names incorrectly.
Oh.
And the names have stood, although the populations have also stood.
Well, you know, Vivian, thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you so much.
And that is, I remember interviewing someone, the author or the person who put together the Romance of Wisconsin Place Names several years ago. And there are a lot of kind of cool stories.
Yeah,
like
that's
that.
A great story.
Oh, thank you so much. Appreciate it. You can join in too. Number to call 1-800-642-1234. Give a call or email us at ideas@wpr.org. You know, I think in the book, and again, I really enjoyed reading and learning about the history, kind of of the Belgian people who came to Wisconsin. And as part of that history in your book, and probably the most intense part of the book was the Seraphine and her family experiencing the Great Fire.
Great Fire. Yes, the Great Fire swept through that community the same time that the Peshtigo Fire was raging, and the Chicago Fire happened that same night. So what happened on the Door County Peninsula and in that community is often overlooked.
Yeah.
But it was horrific for the Belgians, and that was one of those cases where at that time period, you know, a lot of them were established. They'd worked so hard. They'd survived so many things. And then the fire killed many people and left many, many more with absolutely nothing. And it was a difficult thing to write about because it was such an enormous tragedy.
A very intense part of the book, but I really enjoyed it. And it was, again, something I hadn't known that much about, that fire.
Right. Right. And what I wanted to do was convey the horror without being too graphic.
Right.
So I hope that I met that goal.
Oh, you did indeed. And you met another goal when you brought some Belgium cherry pie to the show today. I was going to bring it up earlier when we were talking about the baking ovens. But.
Well, I'm a food historian. I love foodways. So anytime I study a new group, a new to me ethnic group, I have to learn about their food traditions. So this is a Belgian pie that came from Marchant's Foods in Brussels, Wisconsin. They're famous for their pies.
And I think someone said they're the only, probably the only store with a section set aside for just for Belgian
pies. Just for
pie.
Belgian pies. They have a big sign up. And I had the wonderful opportunity to learn how to make Belgian pies at a nearby business near Sturgeon Bay called the Flower Pot Bakery, where a woman of Belgian descent teaches classes, which is great fun. And the biggest problem in having Belgian pie recipes handed down was that the women traditionally made 60 or 80 or 100 pies at a time, and that's what their recipes reflected. They would bake these for special community gatherings and things like that. So,
well, it was it's a very good pie, I can tell you that. I'm enjoying it as we talk here.
Good, I'm glad.
Oh, and before we get too far afield, you do have some appearances coming up. I want to make sure before we get to the end that we bring those up.
I do, thank you. The official launch party for The Lace Maker's Secret will be at Mystery to Me, which is an independent bookstore in Madison, this Thursday, October 11th at 6:30 p.m. I'm going to be at Old World, Wisconsin this Saturday afternoon, signing books and meeting readers. And I have a lot of other events on the calendar, too. And readers can always find out where I'm going to be by looking at my website, KathleenErnst.com.
KathleenErnst.com. Well, let's go to Sandy in New Berlin next. Sandy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Kathleen. I'm calling not with a question, but with kudos. Oh. Just love all of your books, Kathleen. And I encourage all of the listeners to call their local libraries and have them order the whole series. I've done that here in New Berlin, and it's just good to know they're there. I can go back and reread. In fact, the newest book is on hold for me. So I get to be the first on the list. Although I do look forward to getting my own copy this Saturday when I meet you at Old World, Wisconsin.
Oh, good for you, Sandy.
Sandy, please identify yourself when I meet you on Saturday. And thank you so much for the kind words. And also, that's a great suggestion. If your library doesn't have them, they listen to readers that request books. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks.
They do. And I do have to say, I love the part, and I just say this to all the listeners who maybe are not typical fiction fans. It's so much fun to follow the adventures and the relationship of Chloe and Relke, and it's just part of the adventure that you provided for us.
Oh, so Sandy, thank you so very much.
Sandy, thank you so much for calling. And, you know, I was thinking as Sandy was talking, it's probably good to mention too that, all right, somebody dies every single book. There's a murder, but It's not, they're not of the gory, they're not told in a kind of a gory way.
No, they're not. There's not explicit gore or violence in any of the books.
Or sex.
Or sex. No, nothing explicit.
Nothing explicit. And so the age range.
Boy, I have readers who are 14 and I have readers who are 95. And a gentleman that I met just on Sunday when I was at the Great Fire commemoration in Namur, Wisconsin, said, "I want you to know, if you think that just women read these books, I love these books,"
oh.
Which was a delightful thing to hear.
Well, yeah, I love them too, and still a guy. And I bet you have as many male readers, or almost as many male readers as you do female.
I very well might, yes.
I would not doubt it a bit. So, too early to tell how it's going to sell, but I bet it goes really well. And I love the idea of, I really do love the idea of the library.
It's a great idea.
Providing a library service. I have another author who I for some reason I wound up with all of her books as well, and I run my own library service. I've got about 8 people who read all the books, and you have to kind of keep track of it. It'd be a lot easier to let the library do it.
That's right.
Kathleen, it's always a pleasure. You've got another book in the works already, probably.
I do. I'm working on the 10th Chloe mystery as we speak.
Yeah, well, we'll look forward to hearing what that's all about and reading it as well. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Kathleen Ernst, award-winning author, educator. She's a social historian. Her past work as an interpreter and curator of interpretations at Collections of Old World Wisconsin inspired her Chloe Ellefson mystery series, and the latest is called The Lace Maker's Secret. And it just came out yesterday, as a matter of fact. And you can go to her website and find out all the places where she will be talking about her book and meeting with readers. So, Kathleen Ernst, our guest, and she'll be back. We'll do it again with her. We are going to switch gears coming up and take go to the world of medicine and take a look at a type of cancer next. It's called, and you've heard it for sure, prostate cancer. We'll talk about the facts of prostate cancer with our guest, Dr. Tracy Downs, next on the Ideas Network.